Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 43 of On Tap with Corey and Ira. I am Corey Butler.
And I'm Ira Carlson.
And we are your bi-weekly exploration of Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. And we're right in the heart of Southern Minnesota here in beautiful downtown Northfield. We are coming to you live from 95.1 FM, 1080 KYMN on AM radio. And our guest is just down the road here in the heart of downtown Northfield as well, Imminent Brewing. What, four blocks down the road, Ira?
Yeah, about that, 4 to 5.
And we are recording this from Imminent. We're going to have Randy on here shortly for the main interview, and we're actually going to have him in as a special guest here as we talk about a couple of our samples that were sent in from some of the breweries up in the cities.
Yeah, it works out pretty well because if we're going to get set up with all the equipment, we thought we'd just come in here and maybe bring along some of the beers of the week that we're going to talk about and a couple other things. So it's a great way to sit down and talk with him. And, of course, a little later we'll have the style of the week brought to us by Andrew, another local brewer.
Just down the road.
Yeah, so we got a little bit of everything here.
Yeah, I realize I stole your bit a little bit. I didn't set you up. No, hey, what's on today's show?
No, that's fine. It's definitely a local show today by all means.
It's much different when you got the guy sitting across from the table and like, oh, I guess I have to introduce him now. I can't say, can't tee it up for you. Hey, Ira, what's on today's show? Because the guy's 3 feet from us.
Yeah, I know. I can't talk, the little bit of dirt and stuff like I normally like to do, but.
And I believe today's style of the week is Old Ale. We looked at that on the spreadsheet. So you met up with Andrew and got that figured out?
We've had a little bit of fun recently because we've done so many styles of the week that he's kind of digging a little deeper in the styles of the week bag and stuff. And some of them lately, like last week's Brewed IPA, have been a little more topical. And others are just a little more about some interesting ones that are out there and stuff. So, yeah, this week a little Old Ale.
And this might be a fun question for Randy. You know, Ira and I've debated offline how long should the style of the week go for, because how many styles can there actually be? How many will be different for people to go? And we talked about, and Andrew agreed that we could probably do this for a little bit longer. Off the top of your head, like how many styles even come to mind that we could ever talk about? We've done 43 now, or we'll do 43 through today's show. For you, how many styles could there be? Hundreds, right?
Literally.
Legitimately?
Yeah. I mean, you could start with which guideline you might be looking at, whether it's the beer judge certification guideline, or you could look at the Great American Beer Festival guidelines, mm-hmm. which seemingly changes every year where they add another style because there are so many entries. And 40-some episodes? No, you have hundreds of styles.
We got a ways to go. Just got to make sure Andrew is educating all those styles, right?
Yeah, well, and I do like having at least the styles a week sometimes kind of matching up to what's kind of popular and everything else and stuff. So we may roll back to a couple once in a while just to touch back on at least seasonal kind of topics and stuff. But, no, he's been doing great to fill us in with some great styles.
I'm an advocate for the segment because we need somebody on the show every time that actually knows what they're talking about.
Because of course.
We know that doesn't fall to you and me.
It tastes beer.
Yep, it tastes beer. You've actually said that before, so you are quoting yourself. If you want to keep up on what we're doing, when we visit local places like Imminent Brewing or maybe Chapel and Dundas or maybe get around a little bit more, we post photos and videos and updates and all those sorts of things on our social platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to search for On Tap Northfield. I should say, as we get into this, I did post photos from Autumn Brew Review, the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild event a couple weeks ago. Had a really good time. Brought up a friend. You weren't able to make it again yet this year. Decided to go a different route this year. Didn't do any interviews, but thought I could talk about briefly after the fact. It was entirely all Minnesota breweries this time. Imminent was there, which was great. They had four offerings. I sampled a little R&R because I knew that wasn't going to be around much longer. I had my fill of honey basil over the summer, so I let that go for other folks who hadn't had the privilege to have that yet. But it was interesting because it was really hot. It was in the 90s. The heat index was probably mid-90s. The sun was out most of the time, so it was kind of a complex approach because you had all these fall, winter beers, a lot of barrel-aged stuff, a lot of bigger beers, yet it was 95. The sun was blazing. It wasn't unbearable, but it was slightly uncomfortable. And so you had to tell yourself, okay, maybe skip these ones or maybe slow down a little bit because you had to be safe, of course, as you are at all these events. Got to visit a lot of different breweries. It's nice to always visit breweries that you can't get in the cities because they're out in greater Minnesota. It's hard for me to say any real standouts, mostly because I don't remember, and that's not because I had too many. I kept track on their app of what I had, and there was one beer, and we're going to talk about a jalapeno beer here, and I'm trying to remember who had it now, but it was like a raspberry jalapeno beer, which I thought was really interesting, like that. There were a couple good, deep barrel-aged beers I liked, I think Lethbridge did a brandy one, maybe it was their Commander. And then a couple of bourbon, which I'm a big bourbon fan. So great event. Appreciate the guild for allowing for us to go. You didn't go, but I brought a friend. Had a really good time. Always appreciate that. Of course, we did the All Pints North show in July. Had a great time there. Did an entire show built around that. Talked to 8 different people. So this was a nice, slower follow-up. It was held at Halls Island, Minneapolis, just down the road from the former Shell's Brewery, because that's under construction right now. But great time. A lot of water was drank, or drunk, if you prefer. That's probably the correct use of the word. Drunk, because, again, it was hot. And great crowd. And you got the bagpipes. And it's just nice. It's nice to see such great representation from the state and kind of seeing places pop up everywhere and not just in the Twin Cities or maybe the first or second ring suburbs and the bigger regional hubs. But you're finding small town places. So that's a lot of fun. You missed out.
I knew I was going to miss out a little bit on that, but at the same time, I had a couple of family obligations and stuff. I put my summer schedule a little bit too packed sometimes, so once the certain portions of my summer wrap up, I kind of back off a little bit and let my wife dictate the weekends. And so, yes, I missed that one, but we did get a chance ourselves to maybe not get the overwhelmingness of Alpines North or
so many options.
I know what, and that's my thing. Is last time we were at Alpines North, I came back from it. I had so many beers that I liked, but it's almost that in-your-face shock of so many things you've tried over 3 to 4 hours. You come back and go, God, I really like some stuff. What did you like? Not quite sure because I was overwhelmed by it.
It's hard to drink a 2-ounce sample than take 15 minutes to reflect on the experience because you're like, oh, I got to go on to the next 2-ounce sample.
But that being said, I took a few minutes and did at least enjoy. We had to run up and visit our daughter on Friday night and we went up to Cottage Grove to visit her. And on the way back, my wife finally got a chance to come with me and stop at Spiral Brewing and walk in to find one of the head owners, Nick Fox, leading the singing and playing guitar on the stage. Him and the band were rocking
out. We teased
that
on the show.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit on the show, but I was a little surprised to walk in and find him rocking out a little bit. They were playing a little Petty and some other
strong
stuff.
Strong encouragement from us because he was a little gun-shy on it, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, it was pretty fun. His sister stopped in and so had a chance to talk to two of them a little bit and watch some live music. So hats off to them. We talked about it on social media. I haven't had a chance to post that yet, but got a couple pictures of it because it was kind of cool to walk in just to have a beer and see one of the people we've talked about rocking the stage. So.
Well, if you want to keep up to date with what we're going to have up on the show in terms of beer samples or guests especially, look for us on social. We're at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Search for On Tap Northfield. Facebook specifically will show who our future guests are. We've got the whole event calendar thing going on there. Go to ontapnorfield.com to find all our prior shows. We've done 42 of them now. Today's number 43. You can also find us on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Player FM, a number of podcast platforms. KYMNRadio.net, also an option for you. Stick around. We've got a great show. Randy, thanks for sitting on this one. We'll talk to you soon.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us this week by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. And our first offering is coming out of Kona Brewing Company, the Aloha Series Gold Cliff IPA. It's made with real tropical pineapple here, so it's of course a good tropical Gold Cliff IPA here. But this is actually a really solid tasting beer. When I first had it, I was like, okay, it's not too bad and stuff. But the citrus comes in well; it's balanced well with the IPA. Not too not too bitter. Really nice tasting. Comes in at 7.2, and I don't taste that at all. This is really a good tasting beer.
No, you said it tastes good. I think it smells even better. I enjoy the taste of it, but I could just sit here and sniff it for a little bit because it's got a nice aroma to it. Flavor comes through through nicely. I'm sure there's a couple other things put in there in addition to the pineapple. It's got a nice blend of what I would say is a tropical fruit approach. So a very solid offering. Like you said, 7.2 ABV. You can get yourself in trouble if you sit back too long with this one because it's going to sneak up on you.
Yeah, but give me a chance to go back to Hawaii and sit on the beach and drink this, and I'll let it sneak up on me all day long. I'll enjoy this one.
And our other offering is stateside within our own state, actually, which is nice. It's Fair State Co-op up in Northeast Minneapolis. This is one of their long-standing beers that's been out for a while. People really enjoy. I'm glad Sean sent it over because I don't think I've had the original iteration. I've had the raspberry version of this, but this is their Roselle. It's their kettle sour, hibiscus kettle sour. Comes at 5.7 ABV, a surprising 19 IBU, but that doesn't really come through. So that's just a number, really, when you come down to it, tasting it. But nice sour hibiscus, a little fruity, a little definitely tart in there, and you get a little flower scent out of it. I liked it. You know, we're not super sour guys here. We've talked about that before. You know, we definitely have an appreciation for them more than we did maybe a year ago, both with the kettle sour and maybe with more of the traditional route that maybe like August Shells is doing. But I like it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it talks about hibiscus, so you think that you're going to expect more of like a floral thing when you put your nose in there and stuff, or pick it up a little more in the taste. And I think both are more subdued. You definitely, it's a nice clean sour. Definitely a little bit of floralness, but not like overly done. It is a solid, solid beer. Obviously, that's one of the reasons it's one of their top beers out there. There is no reason not to head up to Fair State to enjoy this. Or,
well, the tartness comes through.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a lip pucker a little bit, but not overwhelming for anyone who wants to be introduced to the style, who's maybe a little apprehensive because it can be an overly aggressive style. But I think this is a nice segue into kettle sours.
Well, yeah, because normally you think of the pucker that it's the end of the taste, and so it's got a big tartness at the front, but then the floral kind of like levels it off at the end on your taste buds and stuff. So really a nice finish. If you want to try either of these beers or any of the other beers we've talked about in previous shows, they can be conveniently found south on Highway 3 at Firehouse Liquor in Dundas.
Look for the fire truck. All right, we're coming to you now from Imminent Brewing in downtown Northfield, hanging out with Randy Clay, head of brewing operations for Imminent. How's it going, Randy?
Very well.
Good to have you on the show again. We had you, I don't know how long ago it was. I think it was about a year ago.
Sounds about right.
I think it was about 3 months after you guys opened. You guys opened June 2017. And hey, you're still here, so that's good.
That's right. We've made it a year.
And we thought we... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, a year and a few months.
And we thought we'd stop in and chat with you again. We're getting around to some of our favorite guests again. And you guys obviously just located, what, 4 blocks down from where we record at KYMN Radio. And I just wanted to catch up and see how those first 15 months go. But before we get into that, for those who didn't hear that first show back in, I don't know, probably September of last year, I want to let people know about Imminent. Obviously, we said it's in downtown Northfield, but where can they find it? Kind of what's the MO here when you guys open? What can people expect when they stop in?
Yeah, sure thing. We are a production brewery with a tap room. Our tap room is open Thursday through Sunday. It'll be Thursday and Friday from 4 p.m. to 11, Saturday from noon to 11, and Sunday from noon to 9. We have live music a couple of nights of that weekend, have a food truck or other caterer here those 4 days as well. So we like to have those options available. It's been a pretty fun year. It seemed to be very well regarded by the community. They've really embraced us, and that's been pretty special to have that happen. We had hoped that might be the case, but it's been going so well that we decided to open up to special events Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. People that may want to rent the space out, whether it be a community event or a private event, and we've done a number of those as well. So that's another option for the community too. If you're interested and you need a community space or an event space, Imminent Brewing is available potentially those nights that we're not open. So,
yeah, how's it been to be so well received? 15 months in, what are your key takeaways from those who live near and far who have visited you?
Yeah, I think that we continue to see a lot of new guests. We look closely at our mix of returning guests and new guests and feel that we're still growing. And have a very loyal group of locals for sure, which are a lot of fun, and we see them quite often. But it's also nice to know that there's still new people coming in the door and people discovering us and coming in from the cities or other parts of the state. And I think that has probably been one of the most satisfying things of the 15 months so far, is seeing the new traffic and the returning traffic, and also the steadiness of the business. That, you know, we had a little drop off in the winter, but it wasn't that bad. And now we've been through our second defeat of Jesse James Day's weekend, which is the biggest event of the year in Northfield, and certainly that rings true for us as well. And we're feeling pretty comfortable with that. So we, yeah, we're feeling really good about things right now. You know, really kind of getting in our groove. And I think the biggest challenges really have been for the four owners to learn about running a business and being self-operated. That's been what we've had to iron out and continue to work on. But again, we are getting in our groove and things are going well. We all have our own roles to take care of. And the majority of that is behind the scenes and things that the general public doesn't see when we're open. All of the work that goes into it, you know, Monday through Wednesday or even just Monday through Friday days, and what the four owners are doing in that amount of time. I think you get to kind of see the fruits of that labor when we're open, which is fun. It's a chance for us to, you know, take a breath and actually enjoy the fruits of our labor by watching people have fun here. That's been the best part, really, is watching people enjoy the place.
You alluded to being embraced by the community. You guys have kind of adopted the moniker of Northfield's Living Room. Is that what you anticipate when you guys open? You guys obviously have a very beautiful space in the former Armory Garage, have really made it cozy. Like you mentioned, you got the food, you've got the music in here constantly. Every time I come in here, it's full. Was that something you guys felt would be embraced initially? Was that part of the hope when you wrote out the business plan that, of course, we want people here, we want to be known as a comfortable place that people can come and relax, have a good beer, and listen to some music? Or are you surprised by how quickly you guys became that space?
It was certainly intentional for us to want to be a community gathering space. But you can have those intentions. There's no real way to know that it's going to turn out that way. And so the fact that we have been embraced by the community and people do have events here and gatherings, and we didn't come up with a Northfield Living Room thing. That just kind of happened. And, you know, that was guests' feedback. And that was super fun to hear that and gratifying, because, yes, we did intentionally want to have this as a community gathering space. But, you know, like I said, you can only hope that that happens. You can't really force that. And to see that it really has happened is awesome.
Now, I know you have four children, right?
Yes.
So I don't know how much time you've spent in establishments before, drinking establishments, I should clarify.
Right.
Before you opened your own. But one thing that's kind of really surprised me in a good way that, you know, Ira and I have been known to get out and visit places for years now and talk and have a beer with friends. And Ira's been doing it much longer than I have. But coming here, I'm always surprised how many new people I see. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, they must be from the cities. But I usually meet a friend here. Like, oh, no, I know that person. They work here. They work at Carleton. You, right. You guys obviously have a huge tie to both colleges here. So those are people I think you brought out that maybe necessarily didn't go out as often as maybe we did, or for I just sure. didn't see. But I think you guys also brought out a new audience. And I don't know if that's because of the beer and what you've done with that, if it's the space itself, if it's people are sharing good words about what you guys are doing here and it's bringing out new people. But I'm just surprised how many people in this town I don't know who I see here. And 20,000 sounds like a small town to most people. But it's easy to be anonymous in a 20,000-person town.
Well, and especially as how big in Northfield is spread out, you know, across the community. I mean, you know, there's people that live on one side of town almost never run into anyone else, you know, because, mm-hmm. again, with the grocery stores where
West
they are,
side.
You know, people have, like, their zones that they stick to in town.
And I think that, you know, we definitely have noticed that there are a lot of people that have come out of the woodwork, so to speak, that maybe we didn't see in your other watering holes downtown through the years. And, you know, I attribute that to the location, right downtown. Also the newness of a craft beer bar, you know, and people being willing to want to go check that out.
Hey, tap room, not bar. You have some standards here.
True. This is true. Very much so. The fact that we close at 11 o'clock. I mean, that kind of a thing. And that it is family friendly. Mm-hmm. And it is a different type of a place than other bars and watering holes and such. It isn't the same as those other places. And that's what we hear from locals who we see that didn't go out before. Didn't have anywhere to go is what they say. This is the first time that they've had a place where they wanted to go hang out. That's great to hear.
But they felt like was their scene that they could relate with.
Right.
Because there's definitely a lot of great places in this town. It's just not every place is for everybody.
Yeah, it's funny. Over this past weekend, we had a number of guests, family and friends in from out of state. People from Massachusetts and San Francisco in particular, some couples. And they had a lot of interesting questions about this place because apparently they weren't really used to seeing a place so kid-friendly. And it made me stop and think about the tap rooms in Minnesota that I feel there are a majority of them are kid-friendly. And in fact, there's only a handful that specifically state over 21 only.
I can only think of two, actually.
Right, right. Yeah. So, I mean, this is a Minnesota thing. I mean, being family-friendly, apparently, I thought it was everywhere. I mean, I guess I'm thinking of the ones in Colorado, which I see a lot of kid-friendly, dog-friendly places in Colorado. But
that's how you keep business up in the winter. Well, sure, I mean, let everybody in.
I mean, there are some states that simply do not allow kids in, like, a bar area and stuff. So when I was younger, down Indiana is a good example where, at least back then, we tried to go into Applebee's with some kids and my family, and we tried to sit at the bar area. Just even in the bar area, we had to go on the other side of this wall because kids weren't even allowed in that space. So some of that's law, but, right. You know, in Minnesota, yeah, it really comes down to, you know, if you know the place, a lot of times a bar or restaurant may actually be kid-friendly, but it doesn't appear so, where definitely the breweries have expanded that with. We have Corey's mic sitting on top of a box of Jenga things here. I was out at... yeah. You know, Spiral the other day, and they've got a big Connect Four for all the kids and stuff. So it's definitely a lot more family friendly than it ever was before.
And I think for me, a big piece of that was we, like Corey said earlier, I have four kids, and we wouldn't have done it any other way.
Sure.
It had to be kid friendly. You know, and my kids like coming here and meeting up with their friends here. And, you know, again, part of that's just being right in the middle of downtown, too. So.
Now, Randy, you mentioned the four owners. Obviously, you, your wife Tanya's in there, and then there's Derek and Laura. Do you just want to quickly go over what everyone kind of contributes, what they do either behind the scenes or in front of the scenes?
Yeah, sure. Laura,
since you're not here to speak for themselves.
Right. Laura is a tap room manager, and some of her main duties include booking the music and scheduling events. Derek is also a tap room manager, but he is, in addition to that, our distribution manager. So he's in charge of our distribution to some local restaurants and bars in the area. And Derek is also responsible for booking all the food trucks. So those jobs right there, that's quite a lot of work. And then Tanya, my wife, is our graphic designer and marketing person. So all of the swag we have in here, all the t-shirts and the other things we have over there, that's all Tanya's creative genius that comes up with that stuff. And also the marketing, you know, doing the Facebook and Instagram and all those posts and all that work. She does that as well. So quite a bit of, like I said earlier, behind-the-scenes work that goes into it. And it's a really good team. Everybody has different things going on, different roles, and kind of doing their thing to make this whole thing keep rolling.
Well, I think it's important to mention the names of those involved, and obviously you guys have a great staff here as well, because when people think of breweries, when the average consumer thinks of breweries, I think they just think, do they make good beer, and that's all that matters. And if you make good beer, great, but you want to know who's behind the story of that beer, which again is why we do this show, is to hear about the breweries, hear about the people, their dreams, their ambitions. And one reason why I wanted to bring up the team was because I like something you guys do with your website that I don't see hardly any other brewery do, and that's the blog. You highlight different beer tenders and employees you have here. In addition to highlighting some of the events, you guys have the monthly dog or dog of the month.
Yeah.
So you build that personality outside of the brand itself. Everyone's got to have a brand, whether that's graphics or colors or what have you. But the fact that you guys create content and make your site something that lives and breathes and then highlights the people who help make this machine run, right. I think is so cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is important. You know, we, when we were in the planning stages, we looked at lots and lots of websites and doing research. And what I decided was a brewery either features its people and owners and team, or it doesn't. Like, it's a specific choice. Are you going to let everybody know who you are, or is that not your thing and you're not going to tell the public anything about the owners and the crew? And we just felt that wasn't a choice for us. We we like to wear our heart on our sleeves and let people know. And I think to be a member of the community and be embraced by the community, you have to do that. You can't be anonymous and just be behind the scenes. This brewery is about all of the owners and the employees, and we're all community members. So that very much was intentional, and keeping it active and current and doing the blog and keeping that up to date, that is something that is very intentional too.
Well, I think of the mantra of be local, drink local, all that stuff. And I think about these breweries where you know nothing about anybody involved with that brewery. So what sets them apart other than the beer? Of course, that's the product that has to be good. But if you want to support a local business, you should know who's behind that business.
For sure.
Whether they're the ones who are writing the checks or getting the checks.
Absolutely.
Well, we always talk about it on the show, but I'm a little more, as much as I love beer, obviously, I'm ambiance driven. I mean, mm-hmm. I really like going to places where there's an ambiance or character or people, you know. And again, you talk about it, I love coming in because, you know, if Rich is here, I can have, you know, big hello and, you know, hearty hello and stuff, or, you know, different places you go there, you know, the people or the place really have to stand out. It can't just be about the beer because so many things go into it. So ambiance is definitely a big piece to it. And you've definitely handled that, obviously, with, you know, the unplanned moniker of Northfield's Living Room.
And the word that gets thrown around a lot is the vibe. Mm-hmm. The vibe of the place. People really like the vibe. And that's not something that you can plan on. You can have, again, hopes that it's going to be a place that people feel good being at. And I think by saying that people enjoy the vibe here, that's what they're saying. They feel comfortable here. They feel welcome. And it's a place that people want to hang out. And that's a great compliment. And I'm certainly hopeful and think that the beer helps too, because that's important.
I appreciate that, because I was going to say we're bearing the lead here. We're here to talk about beer.
Right.
So let's talk a little beer. And I say that because my glass is almost empty.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
We're highlighting one beer here. You've got obviously a rotating list of beers. You've got a couple staples, I should say a handful of staples that stay up there. You guys do seasonal beers. You do, and not necessarily seasonal, but you get in a different mix of beers. Why don't you talk about what we're drinking here? This will still be on tap after this airs on the 29th.
Sure,
when you're listening
sure.
To this today.
Yeah, it will be. This is and the reason why the glasses are empty is because this is a session beer, if you will. This is just over 4%. This is a Munich Dunkel. But this, it was done as an ale. A Dunkel is traditionally a lager beer, but we don't do a whole lot of lagers here. So this was an ale version of it, but very malty and rich, dark. But again, only about 4%. It's one of those beers that really confuses most people that think a dark beer must be strong. It's kind of an educational beer, and it's one of my favorite styles. So I knew that we could probably pull off a pretty good version as an ale, and the reception has been really good. It's one of my favorite styles, and brewed it a couple months ago, and it's been selling well, and it'll be around for a couple more weeks most likely, and it'll probably be something that's more than seasonal or once a year. You know,
oh, cool.
we'll do it again.
One of the things I'm impressed with is that it's I love Dunkels, but this really isn't coming in very sweet, because some of the Dunkels I've had can really have a lot of sweetness at the end there, and that may be more of a lager based thing compared to the ale. But you know, I really like the dark flavor to it, the caramelization, everything else, but not as sweet as I was expecting a Dunkel. So very well done.
Thanks.
I was going to say it's almost empty because we've been talking 15 minutes.
Mine's
right,
empty.
We're all taking turns drinking. But I was going to say, too, that I like that you said this is an education beer, because we've talked about that before, both on air and off air, that it's good to challenge people and what their expectations are of a beer based on what they read on the board or how they look at it, how they smell it. You guys had another beer like that. It was your Black IPA released earlier this year. Thought that was another good one that challenged people of what their expectations should be.
Yeah.
when you put those beers out, I mean, do you kind of just kind of get giddy and think about the questions you're going to get or what some of your staff are going to get?
Yeah.
Because you allow people to expand what they think of beer.
Yeah. We're intentional with our staff about, hey, these are the questions you're going to get about this beer, and about training our staff to recognize these different styles and what they mean and how to properly answer questions that you get from your guests. I think that one of the dangers of the fact that there are so many tap rooms is crossing that line between being a beer geek and being a beer snob. Like a geek is really excited about beer and knows a lot about it and wants to educate people and have people learn and try new things. A beer snob will tell you what you should be drinking and you know why you shouldn't be drinking something else. And you know, some tap rooms sometimes have people that can kind of come across as being a little snotty and snobby. And we're trying very hard to make sure that we don't do that, because you are going to get people that walk in and say, well, I don't really like beer. What do you have? Or what's your lightest beer? Or, well, I drink wine. What do you have? Well, there's proper ways to go about answering those questions. And we're intentional about trying to have something on our menu that maybe isn't very beer-like, or something that is going to appeal to someone that's a wine drinker. That, I think, is something that you should have in mind when you open a production brewery with a tap room, because one of the reasons why this is still a growing industry is because there are a lot of people out there that haven't experienced it yet. And you should be glad that they're coming in to check it out and be educated enough to be able to talk them through the menu and tell them what they might like and hopefully make a new fan.
Yeah, I kind of look at it this way. The beer geeks are those who want to invite new people to the club. The beer snobs want to keep the club exclusive.
Sure.
And maybe not because they care about the numbers, but just because that's their attitude. They're just kind of arrogant. And
right.
If you don't know enough to be in there, then you shouldn't be in there.
Right.
Well, let's talk about some of your staple beers. I know some of your more popular ones up there are the Betty Lou's Brown Ale, the Quick and the Red IPA. Obviously, a lot of popular beers, but those two stood out to me. Can you tell us a little bit about those or other beers?
Yeah, for sure. The Quick and the Red, kind of a West Coast IPA, something that I think with all the other IPAs out there and other coasts and other
mid-coast, trends South Coast, all those
are
coasts
out there. I think the West Coast Red is a little underrepresented, especially in our part of the country. Maybe not so much on the West Coast, but it's just a well-made West Coast Red is one of my favorite beers, and has been a very popular beer since we opened, and I've gotten a lot of compliments on it and really enjoy that beer a lot.
I've liked a lot of your one-offs and seasonals. That's probably my favorite year-round beer that's up there the whole time.
Sure.
And then, that's my go-to.
Yeah, and then Betty Lou is our brown ale, and that is sort of a, you know, if you want to talk style-wise, it's an American brown, but it's also got an English character to it a little bit. That is probably my favorite beer up there, considering it is the one I named after my mom. I think that beer is not going anywhere, and it is also popular. You know, people enjoy that. People have that as their regular. And as far as a year-round beer, I mean, it is also our dark beer. You know, we'll have the porter on again in the fall and the winter, but that brown ale is here year-round for sure.
So you just alluded to the porter. I think it's going to be different this year, though, but we'll get to that in a minute. But I was going to say, you know, you've got a lot of these staple beers, your cream ale, your brown ale, your pale ale, the red IPA. You've dabbled with other beers. You got the honey basil. Obviously, the little R&R, which is, you know, a nice raspberry rhubarb flavor. But you also have done the Mole Porter. You've been a little more adventurous probably in the last half year than maybe the first half year, and that's just obviously finding your footing. But I'm curious, 15 months in, growing from a homebrew system to your professional system, growing in confidence of what you're doing here, how have you seen yourself grow personally as a brewer with recipe development, with just getting the scheduling down, being more consistent with what you're doing, and allowing yourself to maybe experiment a little bit more about what you're going to put out?
Yeah, I believe that you know, the first 6 months, four to six months of brewing, I honestly made leaps and bounds of progress. And I think from then on, not only with, you know, increased confidence there, but I think that you need to continually improve. No matter how long you've been doing it, you should always be striving for incremental improvements in what you're doing. And that's not just brewing. That's just, I mean, that's a philosophy of life, of whatever job you have or task that you're undertaking, is that you should always strive to be a little bit better than the last time. And obviously with beer, consistency is key. And making those, taking those steps to make a more consistent product, you know, we're still learning. We're still getting, each batch that we make, we're getting closer and closer to being, you know, more consistent. And at the same time, it has also freed us up to take some more chances and be confident in doing more one-offs and more, styles that aren't normal beers or aren't two style, and that's good. You know, I like having that mix on the menu of things that people are familiar with, but then also things that are for the non-beer drinker or for the adventurous beer drinker, if you will. And I think that we have I'm excited about the future of not just the fall, the next few beers coming up that are actually already in the pipeline, but other beers that are kind of on the docket and things that we're kicking around doing. I'm pretty excited about what's coming in the next, 4 to 6 months.
Well, as you get more confident, more consistent with what you're doing with your system, as you said, it allows you to open up that playbook. What can people expect from you looking ahead to the fall, winter, maybe even beyond as you plan?
Well, so one of the things we like to do, we had at one point, we had three hoppy beers, if you will, on the menu. We have the Red IPA, we have the Cannon Valley Pale Ale, we also had the Guard Down IPA. And so what we've decided is, you know, we're sticking with two of those full-time, the Cannon Valley Pale Ale and the Red IPA. But we do like to have a spot on there that's another rotating hoppy beer, if you will, whether it's an IPA or something that would be considered a hoppy beer, because some people just order that way. What do you have that's hoppy, right?
IPL. So right,
what's that?
An IPL.
Well, perhaps, yeah. Perhaps. I mean, that fits that too. And right now, that third hoppy beer, if you will, is our Extra Medium. An Extra Medium is a hybrid style, if you will, of a kind of a Belgian wit, but it's got a British yeast, and it doesn't have the flour in it, but it has a lot more hops, a lot more citrus forward hops. It's a very citrusy beer, not only with the orange peels in it, but with a lot of citrusy hops, but not a very bitter beer, just hoppy in the sense of the aroma. And
the first run through on that lasted about 8 days, right?
Yeah, right.
That was a quick
seller.
Yeah,
last spring. It was actually in the spring was the first time we made it, and then we brought it back, and we've made a couple of batches since then. And now we are in the works of another beer. I mean, Extra Medium will be around for a couple more months, but then there will be something taking its place. Again, we have a couple things in mind, but we're not sure exactly what the next one's going to be. But just to throw that out there, that we do have a rotating hoppy beer spot on the menu, if you will. In addition to that, we have a couple that are in the pipeline that'll be out. When the show airs, the peach ale will be on tap. And the peach ale, we did a lot of research on different peach beer styles, because there are a few out there. There's quite a few in Minnesota. And the decision behind making a peach beer was all about Colorado, and Colorado peaches have a special place in my heart. I think that they are fantastic, and we were able to track down a lot of Colorado peaches. This beer will have basically about a half a pound per gallon of Colorado peaches in it. We're also supplementing that with a little bit of apricot, and it's going to be kind of a we're just calling it Palisade Peach Ale.
Will that be a lower bitterness then?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely what we settled on style-wise is more of a blonde ale, with peaches. So very fruit forward in the aroma and the flavor. A little bit sweeter, less bitter. There's some peach IPAs out there. There's some sour peach beers, but we decided to go the way of the kind of the blonde ale with peaches and about 5%, so kind of sessionable, and hoping for a little bit of warm weather in October. So that
well, when it's October, I think peaches, right?
Well, well, that's the other thing. You talk about learning curve and what have we learned and the first year. And honestly, part of that is juggling the size of the system that we have with hitting seasonal beers at the correct time. And frankly, you know, we've been a little bit behind on that. We sometimes release what might be considered a summer seasonal or late summer seasonal a little bit later. Our Hefeweizen we did this summer came out in the middle of the summer, not the beginning of the summer. This peach ale is coming out at the end of September, not in August. Those kinds of things that's a bit of a learning curve, but it's also, you know, you can kind of throw some of that out the window and, you should drink Oktoberfest all year round because it's a great beer. You know,
that's what I was going to say. If we want to harken back to that beer nerd, beer snob conversation, I don't think we need to straddle that line so tightly because there's an abundance of beers that fall into those seasonal offerings during those perfect times that work out. So I don't have a problem having a peach beer. I drink Imperial Stouts in July if the mood strikes me. Now, I'm not running a business, so I'm not going to try to sell that in July, obviously. But I think a peach ale in October, I think it's good to have a diverse lineup. And if you think about the general consumer that probably comes in here, they don't know when beer is supposed to probably be out anyway. So if they see a peach ale, I'm like, that sounds pleasant. I'm going to try that. I think you'll do just fine with that.
Sure thing.
Or also, I think, you know, some people may have discovered it that summer and, are still wanting to keep enjoying that flavor, you know, because, the State Fair brings, you have a lot of breweries that do all these experimental things and people come back from the State Fair and go, oh, maybe I'll try something like that. And so, I think those do fit in. I'm not trying to be a beer snob, but I think there is times where I start craving the bigger, heavier beers now that the weather started to turn a little bit. Mm-hmm. Things that now they're like, hey, I can finally have a fire out in the backyard. I can sit around and have one. I'm like, I'm ready for those Oktoberfests and some other ones, but I think that's more of just seasonal taste bud kind of thing, not so much of a beer snob kind of thing.
Well, and I think it's well documented on the show and with Randy specifically that I'm a pumpkin beer fan, and the last 2 years, because they come out now mid-early August, I burned myself out before even September rolled around. So this year, I put myself on a moratorium with the pumpkin beer and finally had my first one last week, and I haven't had one since. I'll probably wait another week or two. So that's not true. I was at ABR, and I had a couple there, but I'll probably, until I go buy something in the store, I'll probably hold off because I want to appreciate it at the right time. And you got that seasonal creep factor now, too. And you guys aren't necessarily out in liquor stores yet, but you start seeing those fall beers show up in July now, August for sure. You'll see winter beers probably here next week or two if they're not already out there. So that calendar kind of gets blurred a little bit.
No, and I think we can blame big retail for some of that, too, because seasonal creep
is already happening in Menards.
I mean, there's Christmas stuff already coming out.
Because people will buy it now.
Yeah.
Whether it's beer or decorations, people buy it. They wouldn't do it if people didn't buy it.
I mean, if you want, it's almost to the point where if you want to enjoy an Oktoberfest in October, you have to buy it now because it's not going to be in the store in October. It's going to be gone already.
Because those nut brown ales will be there and those ginger,
like
spice.
You said, pumpkin beer. If you want a pumpkin beer in November, you need to buy it in September and keep it because that, I
better get down
saying,
the firehouse.
Yeah, we're on the other end of that curve, but the ones that are all early – I mean, I did that when I was looking at Hefeweizens and looking for some local Hefeweizens in the store. They were already gone.
Yep.
And, that was interesting.
Well, I think the takeaway there is the consumer's forgiving. So peach ale, I think, will do just fine in October.
Exactly.
You have my blessing.
And it also all goes back to the quality of the beer. If it's
a good
beer, it's going to sell.
I'm sure it'll be just great.
And it's up to our
make a crack about my blessing.
No, I'm going to make a crack about just realize how long of a detour we just talked from going from talking about peach ale to.
It was an important one, though. I mean, it's like avoiding County Road 1 and Dundas. But still, look for the fire truck.
All right, let's have you tie in an obscure movie reference quick.
No, and we'll get to that. We want to make sure we highlight what's come up here at Imminent.
Yeah, for sure. So that peach ale, and then also it's harvest season, hop harvest.
I was denying that on the board.
Yeah, we jumped into that last year and again this year. So our Minnesota Hop Mess 2018 is in the tank and on the horizon. It'll be coming out the first week of October. Very excited about that. We put a lot of hops in it last year. We put more hops in it this year, so it'll be that much 33% more better. Yeah. So we're excited about that. We were able to not only support most of the hops are from Straight River Hops in Owatonna, but we also sourced some from Sweet 16 Farm down in Houston, Minnesota. Those are some locally grown organic Cascades. So yeah, we're excited about our fresh hop beer. Many of us, honestly, on the brew team felt that the fresh hop we made last year was the best beer we've made so far. So we are excited about this year's as well.
Well, when it comes to seasonal beers, that's probably one of the top three for me every year when it comes to the fresh hops. Then there's pumpkin, of course. What used to be, and just a real quick side note here, because you mentioned Oktoberfest should be year-round beer. That's what's happened to Double IPA, right? I mean, traditionally, that's a spring beer.
Right.
And now it's available in abundance because it's sold so well. Everyone does 17 of them. They're everywhere.
Right.
Which is, I guess, nice, but I lost that anticipation, which I always loved about, you know, Ira, you're talking about, you love when it gets this time of year because now you can get your Oktoberfest, you can get ready for winter beers, bigger, bolder beers. I've lost that in the last couple of years now with the spring offering of Double IPAs just because they're everywhere, which is, you know, the pro con of living in today's beer climate.
Right. Yeah, for sure. We have another release coming up here probably in October, maybe November. Depends on when we feel like we can't hold it back any longer, and that's our first barrel-aged beer. So we have our American Strong Ale sitting in some rock filter distillery barrels back there and are getting pretty excited about that release as well. I think that is typically a seasonal thing, it being that, you know, people look forward to those bigger beers in the wintertime. So we will wait for the chill in the air, release that closer to that time of year, but very much looking forward to that.
And what spirit is that sitting on?
So there's a couple different bourbons.
Okay.
And there's also a rye whiskey barrel back there. And we'll probably blend those all together. And
it'll be just okay.
It's going to be yummy. A nice sipper for when, you know, in Minnesota, we have a porch, a pretty good sized patio here. And people say, well, what do you do with it in the winter? And the answer is you turn on the, burners out there and you go huddle around and shovel out the patio and have a good, barrel aged beer on the patio.
I've been a vocal proponent on the show that there should be about 9 days a year you close your patio in the winter. We get that one really cold, blistering week, and there's like a day on either side of that week. Other than that,
yeah,
just wear the right clothes. You go outside, you can drink.
If a place has a fire pit outside or has the, like you talked about, the heat lamps going and stuff, I mean, you can extend your patio season quite a bit. I mean, absolutely. People are already dressed warm enough, and people want to sit outside, and of course, you know, you talk about it, you're dog friendly. So for those people that want to bring a dog out and sit out by the fire, and it's well worth it.
This isn't the South. We shouldn't be surprised by a little snow and a chill.
Exactly.
Be ready.
That's right.
And you've got a cool collaboration coming up also that you've been working on.
Absolutely. We've been looking forward to this for a while. And again, we get a lot of requests for ciders or something of along those lines. And licensing wise, for a production brewery with a tap room, we can't make a straight up cider, but we can do what's referred to as a graph. Mm-hmm. And a graph is a combination beer cider hybrid. So we've been working on one of those with our friends over at Keepsake Cidery. And here within the next month or so, when it's apple pressing season, we are going to get a bunch of Nate's apple juice and make our graph. And we're actually going to also use a lot of local fruit. It's going to be a cherry and honeyberry graph, fruited graph. Very much looking forward to that. Hopefully that will be ready to go late October, November. That's going to be a good one.
Now, is that still made with hops or is that used like sorghum or something different?
Very small amount of hops. Not much bitterness going on there, and kind of a wheat based beer, two-thirds beer and a third cider, roughly. And then a bunch of fruit in there, too. So it'll fall in that fruit beer category. And, yeah, I'm excited about that one for sure.
Yeah, I can dig that.
All right, so I'm picturing a beer distillery cider circle going on here. So we've had conversations with Loonwicker.
Triangle.
Yeah, triangle. Well, or whatever, you know, the circle of life here.
Geometry's so, tough, I know.
Right. So, but Loonwicker has provided staves to Nate for him to brew cider, and now he's providing something to you to brew beer with. What are you going to return to Loonwicker that they can use for their distillery here? I'm seeing a circle of life here.
Sure. I got to figure that out because I've been waiting for their barrels, and what can I give them first? Well, I don't know. Well, I'll have to think about that. That's a good question.
You could trade some graph for some barrels.
Yeah.
Well, you ponder that. I'm going to ask you a question, though.
Okay.
So you guys have had growlers since basically day one, if not day one, right after that. I know there's always the growler chasers we've talked about on the show. Tanswald maybe didn't have their growler day one, but you guys did, so well done. And that's not a slight against them. It's just, you know, you get them when you get them.
It happens.
You guys have now offered a second vessel for people to get beer to take home from. You want to talk a little bit about that and a decision about the way you went with that?
Referring to that size as the Howler, that's the 750 milliliter small glass takeout. And we've had that for a couple of months now, and that's going really well. We like that. You know, sometimes I think there's obviously a market for that, and a lot of the tap rooms are doing the Crowler, which is the same size, the 750 milliliter size, mm-hmm. which, you know, in Minnesota by law, those are the two sizes we're allowed to sell, a 750 milliliter or a 64 ounce. Which is the half-gallon growler. So we opted for the glass 750 mil as opposed to the crowlers, which are probably actually more popular these days. But there's a lot more cost up front for doing the crowler. You got to buy the little machine to put the top on it and do labels and things of that nature. If we were going towards putting our beer in the local liquor stores, we probably would have done the cans because that's an easy vessel to distribute to a liquor store. But we're not there yet and decided that we wanted to offer our guests the 750 mil size. So we went with the glass. It's easy to do. And it's been popular so far.
Well, as we close here, I want to ask about your neighbors. They've kind of been developing here the last couple of years. You guys had a big event over Defeated Jesse James Days a few weeks ago. What synergy do you guys have moving forward with the branded Armory Square?
Yeah, that's exciting for us. The Armory Square event space coming online here with a new event space in town where people can do weddings and banquets and we can have live music. And it's a bigger space than the brewery. The brewery is very much about live music as well. But, you know, we cap our size at, you know, we can only hold so many people. Armory Square can hold several hundred people and we'll be able to distribute to them. It is a separate license. So they will have a full license. So they'll have wine and liquor and cider, et cetera. They're also big proponents of supporting local craft beverages. They did that at Defeat Weekend over there on the square, and we're really excited about that. You know, they're John and Liz Reppy are very good friends of ours, and you know, we're excited about growing that relationship in the future, not just in the immediate future, but for years to come.
Well, Randy, always a pleasure to chat with you. Not so much on air as much as off air. That was a compliment because obviously we bump into each other occasionally. But
yeah,
let's maybe not wait another year until we have you back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me and thanks for coming down. And it's my pleasure.
I'm excited for that pumpkin beer you're going to make next year.
Puke.
We'll see.
Hey, this is Andrew Burns, and we're here with another Style of the Week. This week we're talking about Old Ale, which is a beer style that carries the name Old for two important reasons. This is a British style, and it is a very old style of beer. It predates a lot of the more balanced or hoppy beers found in England, like bitters or pale ales. This is a malty and a strong beer, and it's also old because it's aged. In fact, that's really where it gets its name. These are beers that are aged for at least a year, oftentimes in wood barrels or casks. And they have essentially no hop characteristic and rely on malt flavors and also fruity esters created by British ale yeast. So think of something that's not quite as strong as a barley wine, but with a similar flavor profile, and then add in that extra dimension of age and maybe a little bit of wood. Now, this is a category that can actually have a lot of variation. There are more ordinary strength old ales, and there are stronger ones. And some people make the distinction between between ordinary and strong. And there also may or may not be a wild Brettanomyces characteristic. You know, wood barrels can do that to beer. And in an old ale, that is acceptable. And some people might even distinguish between a clean old ale and a wild old ale. But either way, this is a British style that relies on British yeast and also thyme.
That's going to put a wrap on this show. Thanks to Randy for hosting us down at Imminent Brewing, a place we've haunted a time
or
two.
Still hosting us.
Still hosting us as we record here. We appreciate that, Randy. But as people listen to this live on 1080 AM here in Northfield, Minnesota, 95 The One, we are not currently in Imminent. But if you're listening to this back on podcasts on our website, ontapnorthfield.com, or iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Google Play, number of those places, we are no longer here, but we did record this here. So thanks to Randy for doing that. I just mentioned where you can find us online if you want to listen to our show. Obviously, if you listen on the radio, that's great. You can find us on social at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search for On Tap Northfield. You'll find us at all those places. We post photos and videos and updates of what we're doing. We thank people who send in different samples for us to try. We will be back in 2 weeks on October 13th, 11 a.m. here on radio with Angry Hog Brewing, a new brewery out of Austin, Minnesota. If you don't catch us here on radio, obviously you can catch us where I just talked about, online. OnTapNorthfield.com is a good place to start. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Cheers.
Cheers.